Hello and welcome back to the Social Matters podcast. We are three social workers talking about social matters. Hi, I'm Nadia.
Hi, I'm Fran.
Hi, and I'm Eugene.
Hi, team.
Hello.
How you doing?
Are you good? Oh, I'm very well, thank you, Nadia. How are you?
Oh,
why are we doing this?
I don't know. Why are you speaking like this?
I thought that was the vibe of today.
I was like, where's Nadia gone?
It's because...
Hello, team. Yeah. Oh, hello.
Okay. It's because this episode is about professionalism.
Oh, people would have already seen that.
So I thought I would be professional today.
How are you both doing? How's it going?
Good. I do feel a bit tired today, but like feeling good. Had a nice weekend, had some fun, was out dancing. Messaged these two both on Saturday night.
I was repping
East London.
Yep.
I always think of you when I'm in East London, when I'm in Dalston. I'm always like,
Nadie's
you.
No.
Not so much Dalston, like all around there.
I just continue the conversation. No. Anyway.
Also, because aren't you Essex?
Stop saying that. I'm East London in my heart. I grew up in East, then moved out a little bit.
sorry. But how are you?
Yeah, good. I want us to do a bit of a check-in that
you don't care how I am, though.
I am so
because
sorry.
You guys are getting me. What is it? New year, new you guys, yeah? It's all right. Guys, look, I'm all right, yeah? If anyone wants to hit me up on social media, just like tag me. I might up for the helpful group because I don't know. These guys trying to oust me. If they ask you to be a firm member of social media, say no.
Eugene, honestly, I'm so sorry. I love you.
How are you?
Yeah, I'm all right. Hey, what's the check-in? No, go. Let's go for the check-in.
So what I'd like you to do is get your phones out and go to your last picture that you took on your phone.
Hey. And then what?
Yeah. And then send it to the last person that called you. No, I'm joking. But just have a look.
But you know what? I've seen that as a bit of like people, they do a game and then as a dare, somebody can send a text to anybody in, like, say, like, we did a game and Fran, you lost, then you give us your phone and we can send almost like an inappropriate text or challenging text to anyone in your phone book. And then you have to do with that.
Have a look at your last photo and then just, tell me about your last photo, if appropriate.
That was the disclaimer for, who was that directed to, me or you?
It's more you.
If appropriate.
We know it's more you.
If appropriate. Okay. Who wants to go first?
Go on, Yuge, because I buoyed you off earlier. You go first.
Yeah, top. Okay, so this is my picture.
Oh, okay.
So people can see that. I don't know if the camera can zoom in on that, but if it doesn't, it's all right. It's fine. It's all right. It doesn't have to zoom in. So this is a picture that, so people can't see, it's my home kind of gym setup with weights and the bench. And I was doing a workout yesterday. And I was actually going to send it to the both of you because this new year, and we've been messaging each other a lot and holding each other to account with regards to our running and our yoga and our fitness and stuff like that. So I was like, oh, let me take a picture and send it to these guys and as a way of accountability for me, but also keeping up that trend. But then I was like, nah, I've got another set to do and I forgot. And then I saw it. I was like, oh yeah, I was meant to send it.
Seen it. Is that a new setup?
It's always been like that. So I think it started for me. So I've always done a little bit of working out at home, but I'm back in the day, but mainly went to the gym. But in lockdown, that's where things changed. So I've got enough space in my flat to have kind of weights laid out, and I have my own way of working with weight, so I don't need to lift the most in the gym or whatever. It's more to be consistent, so it allows me to access it whenever I need to. Also, the whole journey of getting out of bed, getting out in the cold, driving to the gym is enough to make me not go. So now I just have to walk 10 paces to my living room, and then I can do a quick workout whilst watching
Arsenal lose.
What is this? Oh, I'm so upset.
Sorry.
Hopefully by the time this comes out, Arsenal won a few more games. Yeah, but it was actually,
I love that though. So there's no excuse though. That is the only thing, like, with it being so near.
That's it, yeah. There is, thanks for
you know, accountability buddy and all that.
There is always excuse, but it kind of connects with what we said in the last episode around New Year's kind of word and the idea of evolution and wanting to be, trying to be healthier, trying to be, fitter is one of my, one aspect of my evolution. So, and also because I know both of you are on that same vibe, it kind of motivates me, and what I was trying to do is motivate the two of you, but it just remained on my phone.
Oh, we appreciate the intention.
Thank you.
Well done. Yeah. I'm intrigued by your photo because this was your check-in. I was like, have you got something good?
Oh, well, do you know what? So my daughter's not been very well.
It's not vomit, is it? Sorry. I don't want to see that.
No, it's not vomit. But yesterday she like perked up a little bit. So she's like being very cute. Anyway, like I was watching TV and then she came up to me and she was like, Mum, do I look cool? And then this is her setup. This is what she's got like some Love Hearts rainbow sunglasses on. She's got like kiddies headphones on that's like got little cat ears on top of it, and then she's got these two clips at the front of her hair like this, and then she's like, Mom, do I look cool? Yeah, babe, you look so cool, babe.
It must look cool. That's a good vibe.
Look again. I love that she's done it. No, I love that even on her sick bed, she's like
she's just so funny.
Yes,
so funny.
You do look cool.
Oh, she looks super cute. I know, it's like cat headphones.
Little cat ears, and they light up.
I think she looks super cute and cool. And cool. Cute.
She is cool. She is cool. So yeah.
Oh, cutie matootie.
Oh, what's yours, Franny?
So mine is it's not very exciting. So it's me and my girlfriend, and we went on an 11.5 mile walk yesterday.
Wow. What were the trains then? Why did you? Know? Well,
so it's just selfie of the two of us at Tower Bridge. Looking very cold. It was freezing. It's quite funny, actually, because, again, like in kind of like keeping fit, and walking's actually really good for you. It's about 100 calories. I mean, it's whatever. It's not like counting calories, but it was like 100 calories an hour. So we got back and we were like, oh, babe, that's a good 1,200, because I think it was about 11.5 miles. And then my Strava thing said it was 310 calories. Oh, wow. I was like, that cannot be right. That cannot be right. And then I found myself getting in some weird calories. I was like, why is it only 300 calories? Anyway, but it was a really nice walk. And I was saying to you two, bumped into two people I know, which is quite random. Do you know what I mean? Like, of 10 million people in the city. So, yeah. Saw two people at different times, which was nice.
That's nice.
What are you doing on your walk? But yeah, so that was my last photo.
Nice.
Nice right. Check-in.
Well, to try and make this a bit of a segue into our subject matter today, but we're going to be thinking about professionalism. And I suppose I said, you know, if appropriate, show us the photos. And it just made me think about, what's appropriate? What's professional? What in the workplace? How do we kind of define that or think about that? We're going to be talking about professionalism today. So to kick us off, we usually kind of like to start with a bit of a definition of, you know, what it means. What would you both say that professionalism means? How would you define it?
Yeah, I think I would say it's a lot around rules. And almost like a code of conduct, a set of behaviours that governs how you, set of behaviours how you behave. And I think that can include how you dress, how you speak, how you sort of carry and conduct yourself in a workspace. That is what I kind of think of it when I think of what professionalism is. I guess as we go into the conversation, I'll kind of unpick that a bit more, but that would be my kind of overarching definition. I don't know about you.
Yeah, I think in a similar way, you kind of captured all of the things that I was thinking of when I think about professionalism, and it being also connected to competency and skill mm-hmm. that you show. And also for me, one of the things that came to my head is the idea of meeting a standard. Like, there's a standard that you had to meet, and in a particular workplace or in a particular field of work or a profession, in order to be professional, in order to demonstrate professionalism, there's a standard you have to meet, and that's in the work that you produce, or maybe in the way that you appear, in the way that you communicate, in the way that you write, in the way that you treat people, in the way that you are relationally. There's a standard, and that's what professionalism is, or that's what being professional looks like. So that's probably what I would add on to what you've said, Fran.
Because actually, all of us are from a social work background, and you know, as social workers, you have professional capabilities, don't you? And a professional capability framework, and the first one of those is professionalism, which, as you said, is that sort of standards of how to behave. What about you?
You know, when I just think about the word like professional, like the first thing that kind of comes to mind is a suit.
Yeah.
I think about dress, so something about dress and being on time. I don't know why those two things, and also hair. I think about what like is my hair professional? And that's because I think for me, I've had to think a lot about that in terms of, do I wear my afro to work and will it be considered professional? Yeah. Definitely in my early days, no. Like it would be pretty much like this, like scraped up or, or straightened or something. But yeah, so those are the when I first think of professional, dress, timing, and my hair. That's so interesting.
And it's so interesting that you mentioned hair when thinking about being a black person, and I guess a question, because I haven't answered this, but the question is, what are the origins of that with regards to hair?
You know what, I think on some levels thinking about when I was younger, my hair always, to be neat or look nice, either had to be plaited or small, like. And also thinking as well about, I remember this one time in my secondary school, a black boy was sent home because he had his afro. Usually he had cane rows and he couldn't get his hair plaited that one time. And so he had it in two bunches, and his afro was out, and they sent him home, and it kicked up. It was such a, it kicked up such a conversation about, him being sent home because it was discriminatory. Was. So there was something as well about, you can be sanctioned if you walk around with your afro, like, is some sort of messaging that I picked up then. But yeah, and I think growing up, it has, in terms of my family and, what looks neat is something that was a message that I received a lot.
I was just thinking that when you said neat, because I was thinking about like unpicking that, like what the idea of neatness is. And that comes from. And again, on that previous episode, we talked about unconscious bias, about like what, the first vision that you think of when you think professional is a particular, like way of dressing and what hair looks like. And again, all those codes. And I guess if we're being honest, it's a very white centric view. Yeah. Of what professionalism looks like, and that links to hair as well, of how one should have their hair and dress, etc. So I think that is one of the key things that I think of. The vision I have is probably almost like a white man in a suit, maybe with a briefcase. And like it's a very narrow, limited, and ultimately discriminatory when we think of how, as a black woman, what's that's meant for you to maybe, as you said, particularly earlier on in your career, like ideas of neatness and fitting in and conforming as well.
Yeah. And the reason why I asked that question, because I have a similar experience when I'm thinking about the impact of early life and school, and then we had a rule is like the boys, you weren't allowed to have long hair and you weren't allowed to have really short hair. So as a black man growing up, ideally, like back in the day, I used to have like number one all over or fades, or some kids back in the 90s had like patterns in their hair and night ticks or lines in their hair. Kids still have it now, but all of those were seen unprofessional for school. So it's almost like as a black person, you can't express your authentic self because the notion of professionalism has been determined by a society that is very white, Eurocentric, heteronormative society. So people were limited in their expression. And I think that kind of has replicated from school and from back in the day into now the professional field, thinking about uniform. So uniform at school, tuck your shirt in. At work, you mentioned suits and ads with people. What do they feel is professional? Is an untucked shirt professional or unprofessional at work?
Yeah, I was thinking about that when I was thinking about today and how schools are kind of the early hotbed for ideas of professionalism. And it's interesting because my niece and nephew are at secondary school, just kind of in the kind of lower years. And I remember chatting to one of my sisters just recently and saying how, like, ridiculous she finds the level of rules on, you know, uniform and how you can get detention if this is in, this is out, which actually isn't so much the reality in society now. Like, people aren't as much, I mean, they are certainly in some sectors going suited and booted, but it's not about, like, how does that prepare someone for the workplace, saying you must have this in, that and the other. And also I was thinking about how, as you said, it's kind of, it's very white centric, very heteronormative, but I think it's also quite ableist, because another of my sister's friends, their child is autistic, and kind of getting to school and in terms of uniform, and I think had like a different sock on and was like sent home, you know, like that idea of like must be so uniform, and the impact of that if anything's kind of slightly out of sorts or not neat, what that means. And I just think that messaging from such a young age is quite restrictive and problematic in terms of expression of self, authenticity, in terms of the implications of having such a narrow definition and idea of what professionalism is.
My question was going to be like, what are the benefits of having sort of parameters around professionalism? And I think just you saying actually it being too narrow is not helpful. Though, what are the benefits of having like some parameters around it?
For me, it's almost like, and because I was thinking about the benefits and just not kind of developing one narrative, and it's about, I mentioned about standards. For me, it's about setting a standard, especially when I'm thinking about our work in the world of diversity and inclusion, but also previously with regards to family therapy, coaching and social work. We are offering a service, and people in their different view, in their different fields will offer a service. So I feel that in my job, I'm working for people, I'm offering a service, I'm delivering knowledge, I'm delivering understanding. When I was a social worker, helping families through difficult times or whatever. So the standard of that, out of respect of my fellow individuals and human beings, has to be good. And I put good in quotation marks because that would be different for different people. But I know in my work with people, and a lot of my whole career has been working relationally with people, I'm thinking, if I was in that position, this is what I would want. This is the standard I would want. This is how much effort I would want somebody to go into in their preparation, in their delivery, and how they help me to understand ideas. So I think what it does is it sets having a kind of almost in a work context an understanding of what the kind of standards are can help to create an organization where there may be some consistency in how, in the standard or the quality of work people produce for their people they're working with. But I think the danger of that is the danger of the single story. And that single story of like, there's only one way to be professional, or anyone who fits or slightly outside of this box is not professional. So benefits and constraints there.
Thank you for that. And that's really helpful. So when you asked that question about like the benefits, I was just going to come back with a retort to say, I don't think there are. I think it's restrictive. I don't like rules myself. So I think, you know, and I'm not neat. And like, you know, so I think I was like, oh, I don't like it. The sort of inner rebel in me. But actually, when I think about that, and to have those sets of standards, which we all have, whether it's through our coaching, therapy, social work backgrounds, and that sort of code of ethics, I think it's helpful. I suppose it's like anything, it's like the law, isn't it? Or any like set of rules, it's how it's interpreted and used, and if it's done through such a restrictive, narrow lens. So yeah, I think that there can be, but I think it's about how we decenter the whiteness of that idea of professionalism, which I think really needs to be at the heart of, particularly when we think about professionalism in the workplace, which is, I guess, the main thing of what we're talking about. It's a very restrictive view, which can stop people from getting jobs. It can stop people from having that sense of belonging, and, you know, impact hiring process and everything. So I think it ultimately can be, if left unchecked, quite problematic. But yeah, that's helped shift me a little bit from like it's all bad.
Yeah, it's not.
Yeah,
for me, the reason why I asked that question, because I was like, I was noticing the sort of flow of conversation and it being like quite, oh, you know, it's quite narrow. And then I was like, but there has to be some benefits to it. So what are they? And I do think that, you know, as we know, we all come to a task or a situation with our own lenses and our own experiences. And if we're, you know, sort of don't have some parameters, it can perhaps be dangerous. It can be a bit, you know, a bit worrying. So having some sort of framework or some sort of expectation of this is how, you know, we kind of expect you to conduct the work, to conduct yourself, there's something helpful in that. I think the ensuring that how it's interpreted is something to interrogate continuously, and also how narrow it is, ensuring that it doesn't become too narrow is something that is important to hold in mind. So, yeah, that's what I'd say.
I like that.
Yeah.
But, yeah, just thinking, I guess, you know, we are sort of, you know, doing this, like having a critical lens on the idea of professionalism. But why do you think it's important for us to hold a critical lens on the idea of professionalism?
I think, I suppose I touched on it a little bit before, and I suppose it's how it can be played out in terms of having quite a narrow white centrist view could really impact people's experience at work. It could impact actually like people being employed in the first place and maybe not being hired based on, you know, a judgment of an idea of professionalism, or equally being fired. Again, if someone's in the workplace, but then it's kind of viewed, oh, well, how they speak, how they look, how they conduct themselves doesn't fit a quite sort of narrow, white-centric view of professionalism, then that's also problematic. And, you know, that can happen a lot. I know certainly in social work, historically, in terms of people who have experience kind of going through fitness to practice, being from a majority black and brown background, that isn't because everyone's an incompetent social worker if you're black or brown. We have to have that critical lens of what is that that's informing that particular view of a way of sort of behaving. So I think it's how, you know, when acted on, I suppose linking to our previous unconscious bias conversation, that it can be quite discriminatory, really, in terms of what that means.
Yeah, I think it's important to have the critical lens, because there's a danger in dealing with absolutes and putting boundaries or putting people into boxes. So one of the things, the narratives that was around when I was first training to be a social worker, and I don't know if it was the case for the both of you, was, okay, leave all of your biases, your views and your personal self at the door when you're walking into work.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that's impossible. Like, it's literally separating yourself, and no one, and anyone who says they can do that is a robot or someone from a parallel universe, because inevitably, if we've just, like you mentioned that earlier, that your daughter has been ill and that has played a role in how you're presenting today, how you're thinking about her, how you maybe call in, and this isn't work, this is just bants and chatting. But if this was a work environment, if somebody's just, something just happened to your child, then when you go in to have your first meeting on a Monday morning, that's going to impact you. If you've just, from a perspective of gender, live in a misogynistic society, then you walk into a boardroom and there's all men there on a Monday morning, that's going to affect how you present. And similarly with race and ability and all of the other social graces. So the idea separating yourself, your professional self and your work self, is a absolute myth. And the reason why I think we have to provide a critical lens on that is because on professionalism is because people will always be bringing themselves into their work, and that will be through not so great situations, but that would be through also ways of coping and managing and dealing with things. I know, thinking about myself personally, I do my best work when I'm happy and when I'm fun. So if you see me around the office environment, I'm making jokes with everyone. I'm chatting with everyone. I'm making jokes. I'm laughing. I'm connecting with people. I may not always be at my desk. I may not always be doing my task for 7-8 hours straight, because I need that breakup. I need that engagement. I need to be happy, and then I can perform at my best. But an outsider may look at me chatting, making my 7th cup of coffee and laughing and making jokes with everyone and think, oh, is this guy really professional? But that's part of my personal self that comes into my professional self, that's essential for me to do my good work. So I think it's important to be critical of notions of professionalism, because we can't separate the personal and the professional, I think.
Yeah. I was just thinking about, you know, professionalism, like how you conduct yourself and the task of the work, like, and how, you know, is, you know, however, whatever ideas you have about how people kind of show up as themselves at work, does that impact on, like, and if their task that they're doing is being done, you know, if the numbers are checked and, you know, they you've met deadlines and whatever, does that really matter so much? But then I was thinking, what if that person is just like upsetting loads of people, but their task is like amazing? Then you would, you know, it is something to consider. So yeah, I was just thinking about the both. But
I was just thinking when you were speaking then about the impact of the pandemic on professionalism. And I say that because, again, it's so closely tied to with a way of being and dressing, etc. Then suddenly people are in their bed working with the pajamas on at the bottom half. Yeah. Because I do wonder whether, you know, just challenging some of my own thinking, being devil's advocate, part of it is, you know, you're going to a workspace and, you know, the performative element of work, and that if you dress in a particular way, it is sort of, separating out like your maybe personal, your home life, and then I'm in work now. Actually, when suddenly they all became blurred and you're kind of in your pyjamas, does that affect productivity? Are people kind of not in work mode? I would, you know, not necessarily agree or think that, but I was just challenging that idea of like dress and what it looks like. Because dress is so important. I express myself a lot through how I dress, and I think there is something around, I don't like feeling restricted. You know, when somewhere has a dress code, I always feel like business casual. Like I'm definitely on the casual end. But then you have that like, oh, well, is it okay to wear trainers? And what if, you know, they're like this or like that? And I think over the years, I've definitely got more and more confident at just basically being casual. There ain't no business going on.
Be cash.
But how, that comes with experience and confidence and things. But how it can impact, for me, that authenticity, if I was having to wear a suit to work every day. Because that is not how I would dress in other spaces. I mean, sometimes I do. I've got some quite jazzy suits, to be fair. But, so, I was just thinking about dress. Mm.
So how would you kind of say, you know, if we're thinking about the workplace, you've kind of spoken a little bit to it. I was thinking, linking what you were saying to what I was saying before, like if you're like in your pajamas, but like your numbers are high, like is that all right?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, but what if you've got pajamas and a tie on? Batman pajamas and a tie?
Mix it up. But just thinking about in the workplace, how might sort of a narrow definition for you of professionalism, how might that kind of show up in the workplace, and what are some of the things that, you know, we should be thinking about?
I think one of the things that's challenged me, and you mentioned at the beginning, is like the ideas and where they come from, and timeliness is one. Yeah. And I think, you know, I'm kind of, you know, on the cusp of millennial. And I know certainly when I was first going into the workplace, that like sense of like must be in at this time. And, you know, sometimes the PASAG, you know, clock watch, Donna comes in at 9:02. Look at her, look at your desk, look down, you know, like it was very much awesome. Oh, they're leaving at 4:59. Like, and how it was so tied to that. And I think one thing that's challenged me on that is you know, I talk about like Gen Zers coming through and have really challenged that. Like working with younger people, and again, linked to that productivity, has been a bit like, my work's done. Can I go?
Yeah.
And you're like, excuse me. It's 10 to 5. No, you can't. Like, and actually, why?
Yeah. Yeah.
Why can't we go? And I'm like, excuse me, pipe down. It's not 5 o'clock, you know, and you're like, yeah. I think Gen Zers are making waves, and I'm all for like challenging that idea that it must be 9 till 5 and you must do that. I think the pandemic blew that up a bit, that because it was always like you must be in the office, you must do that. People are able to work flexibly, you know, work abroad. If you've done your work, you're done, like linked to productivity. So I think for me, it can be quite restrictive, and actually it can be quite freeing if you just open up the ideas of challenging the rules a little bit around what you wear and time and things like that.
Yeah, it's funny when you were talking about the leaving early thing, I don't mind so much about it's coming late. Lateness really bothers me. And I'm known to be late sometimes. I'm not saying that I'm always on time, but especially like when I've, you know, got an appointment in terms of therapy, or, you know, I'm seeing a family, or I've got like, we've got a client that we're seeing, there's no way that I'm being late. And it really bothers me when like sometimes when people are late, like, and when people are not apologetic about it as well. But I guess that's, you know, sometimes there's a bit of a challenge, I suppose, in terms of like a gendered thing as well. Like sometimes people say, oh yeah, a man, this is very kind of stereotypical, but like might turn up late and just be like, oh, I'm here now. And whereas if a woman's late, she might be like really profusely over apologizing for it. Maybe again, a comment on how a woman might be seen in the workplace and that sort of thing. But yeah, I think turning up late, I just feel there's something about, especially if you said, I'm going to meet you somewhere at this time, like be true to your word, innit?
Yeah.
Like, I was
6 minutes late this morning.
Yeah, we talked about that. Joking.
Did you not get the passive aggressive
exactly.
when you arrived?
Yeah, did you not get the
wind swept off my bike? Yeah.
Did you not get the fingernails in your back when I gave you a hug?
No. I'm not a good timekeeper.
Yeah. But it's
no, but you're not like half an hour late. Like, yeah. But then again, I suppose it's like, what's my standards? Like, if you're late, you're late.
But that word is a nice segue, because I think it goes back to what we're saying about standard. It's like when you talk about being late for something like therapy and things like that, if somebody's stepping into a therapy room, for example, they're in a particularly emotional state. And when I say emotional, it doesn't mean like shaking and ready to cry, but they're ready to kind of talk and receive questions and be opened up to a particular way. And if you're a therapist and you're coming in late and you're like, oh, sorry, like, you're not in an emotion, you're expressing something that may be that's connected with uncertainty or a lack of preparation and things like that, then how you are positioned will cause somebody to act out of a particular context. So maybe that person may be like, oh, actually, maybe I'm not ready to kind of chat and talk. So I think it's not black and white, it's grey. And I think I lean towards the pros of professionalism in setting the standard. But I guess the kind of going back to the effects and how that could impact it or show up in the workplace, I think it can alienate certain people, cause certain people to live a little bit out of kind of fear or worry. And I'm thinking about a place where to be professional is everybody wears suits and you're a young 21-year-old from a working class background and you're just got your first job in the corporate world and everyone's wearing suits and everyone's looking at the quality of suits. Yeah, how much suits cost? Like 200, 100, 200 pounds. You have to buy at least five of them or something like that. I'm like, or different shirts, and that, how much that impacts on your finances and things like that. So yeah, I think that there can be, it can impact in the workplace if you just have a narrow definition of, but if somebody were to come in like maybe some jeans and a loose shirt and some trainers, like that allows them to be comfortable, be authentic. It doesn't affect them as much financially. And in an ideal world, it shouldn't limit on how they're coming across in their professionalism.
Okay, interesting chat. Really interesting. Thank you both. Hope you enjoyed that conversation. If you would like to find us on social media, you can find us on YouTube, the Social Matters Podcast. We're also on Instagram at Matters Podcast and X at Matters Podcast as well. We've been Free Social Workers talking about professionalism. Do spread this far and wide. Thanks for joining.
Bye.
Bye.